Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's a win-win. The report that Mike McCarthy is possibly being courted by the Chicago Bears. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. So the Dallas Cowboys head coach does not have a contract now, Perloff. He cannot do an interview unless Jerry Jones gives a blessing until January 14th, so that's next week. But according to ESPN, the Chicago Bears want to interview McCarthy for their vacant head coach job, and I love this for both parties. First of all, for the tortured Dallas Cowboy fans in our life and in our audience, you get rid of McCarthy, which I think you're ready for anyway. Guy had some nice seasons, 12 wins, couldn't get it done in the playoffs. You need someone to put you over the top. He can't do that. Okay, say goodbye to him, get some new blood in, a little change. And then for the Bears, this is a team that's not thinking Super Bowl next year. That'd be pie in the sky. That's unrealistic. They're thinking develop Caleb Williams, which Mike McCarthy can do. He can develop a young quarterback. And he would give him the most gravitas, I guess, since Lovie Smith took the Bears to the Super Bowl. This would be a slam dunk hire. I know John Fox was a head coach previously, but this would be a slam dunk hire for them because McCarthy will not embarrass you as an organization. In fact, far from it. Not like Matt Eberflus. Listen, I get Mike McCarthy isn't Mr. Clock Management, Game Management. He looks like Einstein compared to Eberflus. He will not lose you a game like Eberflus did on Thanksgiving with the entire world watching and obviously cost him his job.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's always the goal as if you're a franchise, to get the guy who just won 7 games in Dallas with a massive payroll. Yeah, I just can't get excited about a retread, a double retread. I don't know what you call it, a three-tread with Mike McCarthy. It'd be his third team. Like, that's just you can't do that. You can't just hire a guy who just came off a losing season who already felt like a retread in Dallas. Like, I'm sorry, like, you have a potential superstar quarterback. You got to bring in somebody fresh to build around. You got to find your Sean McVay. You cannot go for the safe pick with Mike McCarthy.
Listen, when have the Bears ever found their Sean McVay?
I mean,
what evidence do you have that this organization is on the cusp of bringing in Sean McVay? You have absolutely no evidence of that.
No, but I mean, that doesn't mean that they can't try. I mean, they've hired so many defensive coaches too. It's like, I think Lovie was a defensive coach, wasn't he? Yeah, like
not Matt Nagy. He was an offensive coach.
And he was good. And he actually made the playoffs.
Then why isn't he their head coach?
He kind of hit a wall. I mean, there are bigger problems there in Chicago. Nagy was not terrible as the Bears coach at all. I mean, do you think he was?
I know that they couldn't wait to get rid of him. And Trubisky did not work out, although he didn't draft Trubisky. But I don't think that you can say we're ready to bring in our Sean McVay. And listen, maybe Ben Johnson is that guy, and maybe Caleb Williams is so attractive that Ben Johnson, who's going to have the pick of whatever job he wants, he'll say, give me Chicago. It's a great city. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you get all that stuff. He's familiar with the division because he's the offensive coordinator with the Lions. All of that makes sense. But I don't hate the McCarthy idea. In fact, I really like it because McCarthy also knows the division. Granted, it's been a while since he's been in the NFC North, but he was in that division for over a decade. And I believe that he would be able to develop Caleb Williams. And beyond that, I don't think McCarthy's like a bad culture guy. The thing about the Ben Johnsons or something like that, they're just unknown.
Right.
It's a high unknown. I've already farted away 1 year with Caleb Williams. I can't afford to take a risk on another guy who's going to come in and he might be terrible. He might just be a career offensive coordinator. There's a reason why Ben Johnson hasn't taken a job yet.
He's 37 and he didn't interview last year. That's the only reason. He would have gotten 5 offers last year.
No, I'm saying he could have. You're telling me that the Washington Commanders is not an attractive job now? He turned them down. He could have been.
I mean, they were coming into a new ownership. There are a lot of questions. Like, I'm not blaming him for that. They were coming off to the Snyder era.
Listen, I just think that, okay, maybe he's just being picky. That's fine, and he's earned that. But there's also maybe he feels like he's not ready. Maybe he's going into something where, I don't know, maybe he's not like head coach material. Maybe he just likes to be the genius offensive play caller. You don't know. I know Mike McCarthy can be a head coach.
Ben Johnson. So you don't think Ben Johnson's taking a job this year?
Oh, I don't know.
I do. He's definitely taking a job. I mean,
yeah, probably, but I thought he was taking a job last year.
No, I mean,
why not last year?
I think he thought I can win the Super Bowl here with the Lions. I'm not going to turn down that opportunity.
Okay, what if they lose this year?
Like,
what if they lose this year?
I think he's gone. I think he gave it one more year.
Okay. Well, but, I'm just saying you have no evidence that he's a good head coach.
I mean, you do have Caleb Williams. Like, you really need an offensive mind in there. McCarthy is technically an offensive mind, but I don't feel like he feels cutting edge. You know, you look around the league, like, who are the other interviews? It's Liam Cohen. Like, that looked really good in Tampa Bay. Their offense was
what, the 10-point deficit that they had to overcome in the fourth quarter against a BS Saints team? That looked awesome.
You don't think that Tampa Bay's offense looked good this year? I'm surprised by that. But then Joe Brady at Buffalo is in the name. He's 35. Like, that's exciting. He's young. I'm not going to say Cliff, but you got a lot of offensive minds around. Like, bring somebody in there who is going to really like spread out that offense and make life easier for Caleb Williams. It was a mess last year. I'm sorry, Shane Waldron. I didn't know he was going to be that bad, but there was no easy plays for Caleb Williams. Like, give him some layups, get that offense going, kind of like Cliff Kingsbury did early Kyler Murray. Just, I don't even care. I don't think McCarthy is definitely going to be up to that job. I feel like they could be like 4-13 with McCarthy. I think that could go south fast.
Oh, I don't think so. I think you have way more variance with a Ben Johnson or someone who's never been a head coach than you do with a guy who's got decades of experience of being a head coach. And I think Mike McCarthy, you said he's barely an offensive guy. Come on, let's not rewrite history. He's 100% an offensive guy.
Yeah,
he's 100%
like a
quarterback
2005
guy.
West Coast offense guy.
Dak Prescott literally came in runner-up for MVP last year with him calling plays for Dak Prescott. I don't know where if you want to kill McCarthy on game management and some play calling decisions, and he kind of sometimes sounds a little stumbling, bumbling. You can totally there on that. But I can't knock the guy for what he actually has put on his resume, which is he is a good quarterbacks coach. He did get the most out of Dak Prescott. Why is Dak Prescott got $60 million? Partially because of Mike McCarthy.
Stayed healthy a year. But, you know, at the end of Aaron Rodgers, like, it was getting stale.
And I'm sure that had nothing to do with Rodgers. Rodgers not wearing out his welcome a little bit, too.
But he had two MVP seasons after he left.
Because he got a chip on his shoulder that the team had the audacity to draft Jordan Love.
I think it's McCarthy. But you see the same thing with Dallas' offense. Like, it just missing something. In key moments, like Dak and CeeDee Lamb, like, they just didn't have, like, the easy plays. When things started to get off the rails, like, things get off the rails fast.
I think you're looking at one game, the loss to Green Bay, which is totally fair. CeeDee was terrible in that game. Dak was terrible in that game. The defense couldn't stop the run in that game.
Obviously
Everything was bad about it.
But Niners lost too.
Okay. Yeah. Now, if you want to put that on McCarthy also, but CeeDee Lamb, there's a reason why CeeDee Lamb, I put some of that on Dak also, but there's a part where CeeDee Lamb became one of the best receivers in the league.
In the regular season.
Okay, in the regular season, I mean, he had an all-time great game against Tampa. There's a reason why he got paid basically just one shade below Justin Jefferson. And I think the fact that the Cowboys didn't have a second weapon receiver is not Mike McCarthy's fault. It's Jerry Jones's fault.
Yeah, maybe. But still, I can't get excited about it. And I'm sure Chicago's with me on this one. Like, they would take McCarthy, but it's not like, yay, we got Mike McCarthy. And it doesn't feel like Mike McCarthy's going back to the Super Bowl with that team. At least, I'm just saying, like, Ben Johnson, you might strike gold. I don't think you're getting it. I think Ben Johnson, if I'm Ben Johnson, I'm staying far away from that team. I would go somewhere else. And even with Trent Baalke in Jacksonville, I would still rank Jacksonville above Chicago.
Because of Trevor. So here's a...
And it's also warmer.
So, well, fair. Here's a here's one thing I really need answered about Ben Johnson, okay? Because what's the one thing about the Lions that we criticize the most as, like, the public? Dan Campbell's decisions on fourth down, okay?
Right.
So who's Ben Johnson when it comes to these types of calls? Because when you're the head guy and it's your decision, if he's going to be of the Dan Campbell, let's take it both ways. Say he's of the Dan Campbell mold, okay? And there's not a play too aggressive for him to call. And it's always fourth downs in your own territory, taking massive risks.
Okay.
Some of those don't work out. Do you have the stones like Dan Campbell does to stick with it. Because for all that, I know Brandon Staley was not a very good coach, but that was his MO in his first season with the Chargers when they made the playoffs. It was always about going for it on fourth down, always about fourth down. A couple of them didn't work. He got criticized and he turtled. And then it became this sort of weird in between. Is he going to go for it? Is he not? So who is Ben Johnson? And does he, if he is going to be Mr. Fourth Down aggressive like Dan Campbell, when it doesn't work out, are you going to stick with it? Are you going to run from it? Because all of a sudden you're the top guy now who's getting the criticism. Like Dan Campbell got eviscerated after the NFC Championship loss to the 49ers. Totally eviscerated. Does Ben Johnson have the backbone to stand up there and to stay with his convictions if some of these fourth down plays don't work and you lose big games and get criticized for it?
Wait, I'm confused. So do you want him to go for fourth down or not go for it on fourth
down? Well, I'm asking, is he going to be Dan Campbell Jr.? You know, once he gets out on his own.
Is that good or bad?
It's what's his style going to be? You don't know is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but either way is fine. But
either way, it's fine.
Well,
if
he can recreate this offense, and who cares what he does on fourth down? Like, if you could run the ball like that, and any team, if you could be 15-2 and have a bunch of tough fourth down decisions, I think I don't think that's a concern. Like, really, like, and besides, so pick one way or the other. Go pick either lane. Who cares? If your offense is great, what's the difference?
Okay, but this is the thing. It's not like pick one or the other. You have to have an identity when it comes to this stuff. I think because you look at what Dan Campbell has done. He's stuck to it, even after that NFC Championship game where you have a 3-score lead and you blow it, and fourth down decisions were a major reason why. You didn't play conservative at all. You stayed super aggressive, and it cost you.
Yeah, but Dan Campbell's considered one top, you know, now he's one of the top coaches. Like, so, I mean, everybody would want Dan Campbell, wouldn't they?
Well, ask after the NFC Championship game last year if everyone wanted Dan Campbell, because that was not the case.
I think, like, honestly, if this is like what we're talking about, like the teams are hiring, like that's a luxury problem to have to worry about the fourth down calls in the NFC title game. I mean, I just think it's not even about Ben Johnson. The formula for all the great coaches is offensive coordinator and a great, great team becomes like, that's where you get the good coaches from. That's why, like, you look at these playoffs, it's filled with guys who are offensive coordinators and got their first job. So McCarthy was, I think he was he was OC. He was also a quarterback coach. I mean, like pretty much Kevin O'Connell, like, what do you think he is? Like, basically Ben Johnson is Kevin O'Connell 2.0. Why would any team not want to hire that?
Well, first of all, Kevin O'Connell hasn't played in these playoffs yet. So, yeah, he's probably going to win Coach of the Year now, and they have this gaudy record. Yeah. But if they lose to the Rams, I think a little of the shine is going to come off of Kevin O'Connell.
Maybe. The dude took Sam Darnold to a 14-3 record.
I'm just saying there's a lot to be written here about Kevin O'Connell. Like, I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I'm just saying the stock is so high on him right now. If they lose by a touchdown to the Rams in L.A., which is not a crazy thing to say.
Oh, definitely.
Then it's okay. So I'm saying this stuff is fluid, and you don't know anything about Ben Johnson and what his philosophy is.
Well, you know, what his offense looks like. He's play calling, so you do have something on paper.
But about the fourth down decisions, is that him or is that Campbell?
I think you're overestimating that. I think if you can have all these guys, I'm looking at Matt LaFleur, Sean Payton, like if you could just get a good offense and be in the position to make these tough fourth down calls, most owners would take that. Okay. Like, I'm not so worried about that. Like, I want to turn my quarterback into a star, and I think Ben Johnson can do that.
855-212-4227. He's going to be walking into a little bit of a different team. The idea that he's going to have a GM that's probably as talented as Brad Holmes.
Unlikely.
Unlikely.
Yeah.
And the fact that you may have ownership who actually stuck with the Lions through some really tough times. 3-13-1, starting off 1-7 the next year. I mean, the Lions actually showed a lot more patience than his next ownership might. If you go through some growing pains, especially with a guy like Caleb Williams, who, if he does take the Bears job, has so many expectations.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been a good argument for him to take over in Jacksonville. But then since they kept Trent Baalke,
right.
Yeah, that's a good point. Chicago is a tough spot. I agree. It's a bit of a crucible.
Totally. Let's go to the phones. 855-212-4227. Jeff's in Tucson wants to talk about Perloff's beloved Philadelphia Eagles. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, Maggie. How are you?
We're doing great, dude.
Good. One of the things I want to comment on is that so our quarterback is like one hit away from being like in purgatory. So does he continue running? Does he even get in the game? My second comment unlikely a Browns fan from life, Ohio State grad, and go Cavs. Look at that matchup tomorrow night. Appreciate you, a longtime listener.
Oh, Jeff, thanks so much. Okay, little to unpack there, Perloff. Any chance Jalen Hurts does not play in this game?
I don't think so. I'd be floored if the headline passed that Jalen Hurts is out. Because I was watching the game. It just did not look like, when I think of a catastrophic concussion, which are awful, that was not that. I can't picture it in my mind's eye. Can you?
No, but again, I didn't think he'd be in the protocol for 2 weeks.
Well, we knew he'd be in the protocol for 1 week because it's very hard to get out of the protocol. If you get a concussion on Sunday, it's hard to get out of the protocol by Friday. It rarely happens. So the next week was meaningless week 18 game. That was weird. We weren't even paying attention. So maybe there's extenuating circumstances because of the timing. That's what I'm kind of assuming. Like if week 18 was a must win, I think he would have been out there.
Yeah, I guess I see it a little as either you're in the protocol or you've passed the protocol.
No, see, I don't take the protocol seriously for even a half a second. Those are all malleable depending on what the team needs.
So, okay. Ohio State.
Do you think it's like hard science, by the way? Like the protocol? Give me a break. I've seen guys who literally don't even know what city they're in go in the next play at least a dozen times this year.
Ohio State, a 5.5-point favorite over Texas. We're talking about Jeff's favorite teams now. And I'll tell you guys which way I'm leaning.
I think you and I are competing over that game because
really?
We make picks. Like I mean, is there...
Who's picking against Ohio State right now?
I mean, 5.5? Are you kidding me? They're going to blow the doors off Texas the way they are playing right now.
Hard to find a path for Texas here with the way that Ohio State's playing.
I mean, Texas has got that defense. And maybe, I think people might say, well, Ohio State will turn back into the team that played against Michigan. Like, just slow down the operation a little bit.
Yeah, I guess Chip Kelly's going to have to go into some kind of a coma. I'm not really sure. And then... what do we have? What else do you want to say? Tomorrow night, Thunder, Cavs. So you get the top team in the Western Conference against the top team in the Eastern Conference.
Both of these teams have been playing, and we complain about the regular season. Both of these teams are not playing like tank ball or, you know, load management ball. These teams have been playing great regular season, so it should be a good game.
Thunder are on a 15-game winning streak. Cavs are on a 10-game winning streak. Collision course.
This is what dreams are made of.
Yeah. Cavs, Thunder.
I mean, listen. Throw out the record books when these two franchises get together.
Story, actually, they mystery.
Yeah, man, the Cavs and the Sonics.
What about them?
It's storied franchises.
Oh, I thought you were mentioning like that they had some great,
but they have
matchup
no connection to each other.
Like,
well,
I mean,
LeBron did
finals.
LeBron played the Thunder in the finals. That's almost
he was
like,
just with the Heat.
Yeah, wrong team, right city.
LeBron played against the Sonics like once or twice.
Yeah, I was thinking. Cavs, Sonics, like, have they ever even played each other? Like, different conferences.
Yeah. Cavs, Thunder, I don't know about this.
Sean Kemp played on both franchises, by the way. That is something to note.
He did.
There you go.
Wasn't so great in Cleveland, as I recall.
No, that part wasn't that good.
Let's
those uniforms
that
were
part.
Cool. Those uniforms were cool, though. Those light blue and black, that logo. Cool logo.
Yeah, Sean Kemp let himself go toward the end of the career.
Well, maybe we're starting a new era of Cavs, Thunder. This is the new era. They become huge rivals, and they meet in the finals 10 times
Shea
in a row.
Shea versus Donovan. Yeah, the new era of Thunder Cavs and the rivalry, the storied rivalry between Cleveland and Oklahoma City.
I think it's really hard to tell in the load management era if you mentioned those gaudy win streaks. Like, does that mean anything? Like, it used to be the best regular season teams would often meet in the finals. Is that the trend now? Like, those are big win streaks.
Massive. I don't think
we know. Like, how much does it mean now?
I think it still means a lot because these teams, the Thunder particularly, because that's the team I follow, I love Shea, like they've had high-profile matchups against teams that clearly were up for them. The Knicks played a game like they were, like it was game 7, and people are still killing tips for it. The Celtics, just a couple nights ago, also up for that game, and they beat both of those teams. So I think the Thunder are now becoming a team where it's like when they come into your building or you go there, you want to make a statement, and they're still holding firm. Now the Cavs, I'm a little more skeptical about, but I think this is a game to watch if you are trying to pay attention to what may be important in April and June.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, listen, your 76ers will be a litmus test.
I don't agree.
Can they flip the switch and somehow make the playoffs?
I don't agree because I saw what Luka, like, just like at the trade deadline, the Mavs all of a sudden got two defenders, and all of a sudden they got hot in the playoffs, and the and Minnesota somehow knocked off Denver. Like, I just am not convinced that the regular season is that important.
At the same time, Boston was the best team wire to wire.
They were good.
And I kept trying to tell you guys they were the most talented team, and nobody wanted to believe me. And then they went and just destroyed the Mavericks. I mean, I think it's a mix. I think the teams that are really good, they will have good records. There are some teams that may be fugazi, and maybe they'll get shown. I think that the Thunder, they look serious, though. They would scare me.
There's a lot of historic perception to say, oh, man, the Thunder Cavs, that's an NBA Finals preview on a Wednesday night. Like, that just is not something that's ever been in our NBA vocabulary.
Listen, Jeff in Tucson just called us up to talk about it.
Yeah, no, I hope he's right. That would be super fun for the NBA, just get those massive markets into the finals.
855-212-4227. Yeah, New York, L.A., Cleveland,
Dodgers, Yankees, Thunder, Cavs, same.
Well, listen, Dodgers, Yankees, what do we get? Five games? Sorry, Manny. Okay, lots more to do, including, we mentioned it before, we're going to get to it. Somebody is lying, and we don't like that around here, so we call it out when people lie. We'll tell you next, M&P.
The Defensive Player of the Week is sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces, DOD, veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. All right, Maggie, you want to jump in with your guest for Defensive Player of the Week?
Yes, I think that it is Lions cornerback Amik Robertson, who had the assignment of covering Justin Jefferson in a winner-take-all for the number one seed in the NFC on Sunday night. Jefferson held to 3 receptions on 9 targets for 54 yards and no touchdowns. I think Amik Robertson is the Defensive Player of the Week.
Okay, I like that. I just have to look up the name. What was the nose tackle who got the INT?
Pierce?
Was it
from the Ravens?
Was that who it was?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Oh, right. Off Bailey Zappi. Right. Okay. Yeah. I like that. I'm going to go with a 350-pound lineman with the big interception.
But he took a knee. We needed him to try to run it back.
He died when he took a knee. He almost twisted up his whole knee.
His knees are doing work. The guy's 350 pounds.
Just ran out of gas.
Yeah.
He went 2 yards.
That was awesome, though.
Already on a quarter tank. That's what happened.
Yeah, that's my favorite moment of the weekend. You guys were very close. Those are two of my favorite moments of the weekend, actually. Those guys played great. But my Defensive Player of the Week this
OG
week
Anunoby.
Is not OG. Knicks are not playing well. Trey Hendrickson, who had 3.5 sacks against the Steelers in a game that the Bengals did need to win to try to stay alive. I think Trey Hendrickson's one of the most underrated players in the NFL. We talk about T. Higgins getting paid. This guy also wants to and needs to get paid. So shout out to Trey Hendrickson, one of my favorite players in the NFL, and my Defensive Player of the Week.
It's awesome. Ja'Marr Chase getting paid is the big deal, too.
Like, they got to pay everybody, and it's the wrong guy to ask when you got Mike Brown's the owner.
Well, I got to tell you right now, like, yes, Trey Hendrickson's amazing. Yes, they need T. Higgins, but they got to back up that truck and deliver money to Ja'Marr Chase because he is the one, and they're not going to do it. What are they doing there in Cincinnati? You bring up a great point. Hendrickson, I've never seen a more one-man defense. Like, name another Bengals defender. I keep saying that. Like, he is just, if he doesn't get to the quarterback, the other team scores every play.
Worthy, although the team lost. Andrew Bogish. Oh, wait. First, before we go to Bogish. Oh, sorry. They did win by 2 points, but they didn't get into the playoffs. Fine. And now they're all going to be miserable because no one's going to get paid. And Mike Brown's going to drag this out a little bit longer. Anyway, okay, before we get to Bogish, we've got to get to some lies that were told yesterday by a few owners, Perloff. They finally came down from the gilded suites to explain to us why head coaches, in some cases GMs, were actually shown the door. So we're going to play a couple of clips from owners who were speaking yesterday in the NFL. We're going to tell you why they're lying.
Okay.
First is Robert Kraft, who said that firing Gerard Mayo after one season was the hardest thing he ever did.
I don't know. In my life and my business, I make certain decisions. I know when it's right, and it just happened. And it was very hard because of the personal relationship I feel for Gerard and the human being he is. And I felt guilty I put him in that position, but we're moving on.
Whoa.
Well, I don't think that's a lie. I think he does feel bad. He clearly feels real. Oh, he feels terrible.
No.
You don't think he feels bad about Gerard, what happened with Gerard Mayo?
Nope.
Oh, you are so wrong.
Because I think that he's the one who is not letting Gerard Mayo, like, he's his personally tabbed guy.
Right.
They gave him a rookie quarterback that they didn't start for the first 6 weeks, and they spent almost no money in free agency, and now he's all broken up because the team didn't win. What do you think was going to happen? You were picked to be one of the worst teams in the league, and it actually would have been better if you'd just been the worst.
Yeah, no, I think he's really upset. Like, I think like he is completely responsible for this guy being hired. Partly, I mean, I think that helped push Belichick out the door, and he screwed up. He promised this guy, you're going to be the coach, probably had a very good personal relationship with him, and basically told a friend, I'm sorry, I got to fire you. But so that's hard to do.
Did he have to fire him? Why not let him? If you think he's got all this promise, why would you think that he can't get better?
I think that Kraft is looking at a short time window, and I think he doesn't think Mayo can win a Super Bowl. And I got to be honest, like, Mayo did make a bunch of mistakes. I would get an offensive guy in there with Drake May. I totally get what he's doing. But you don't think he felt bad. You think he's like, I don't even care about this guy. See, I think that Robert Kraft really gets emotionally attached to people.
Nah. Okay, here's Shad Khan.
You're so wrong on this one. Because Robert Kraft definitely gets very attached to people. But go ahead.
Shad Khan is the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So he's keeping his GM, fire the head coach. But he would consider changing the GM if the new coach thinks they should.
If they were to say, I would like to reevaluate the front office and the general manager, what would your response be?
My response would be, how would you improve it? And then if it is credible, you want to do it, okay?
Okay. Trent Baalke was sitting next to him, by the way, when he said this. You know what happens here? We're going to talk about it more with our next clip. Actually, let's save it. Prof, do you want to say something about Shad Khan?
Well, yeah. Breer actually said, Albert Breer, Monday Morning Quarterback, said that there is a chance that, he said this even before he made that comment, that they do actually ultimately change GM this offseason, maybe even after the draft. Let Baalke run the draft because you don't want to bring in, he's already done a lot of the scouting work. So that's possible with Jacksonville.
Both the Jets and the Bills have pulled that in our lifetimes, and it's a bad idea.
Well, I mean, it's just hard to bring in a GM right now. They're a mess right now, but I can't believe this is a huge mistake because they could have gotten Ben Johnson. They screwed it up.
Well, we don't know. They might still get Ben Johnson.
I don't think he's even going to interview there.
Crazy. All right, final one. Owners saying crazy things yesterday. Here's John Mara, the owner of the Giants, keeping Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, but they better fix the Giants and fast.
How long will it take to improve the product, John?
It better not take too long, Bruce, because I've just about run out of patience.
Oh, you ran out of patience, yeah. John. Okay. Yeah, that's nice to know. But
so this is what Shad Khan could be doing, and this is what John Mara is definitely doing. If you want to say how bad franchises stay bad, you just basically put your head coach and GM on the hot seat with a year to go. So what do you think that GM's going to do? Spend your money to the high heavens to try to save your job. And then when you don't, now the next guy is saddled with all the big contracts that you just handed out, yet you're going to be saying we're going in a different direction now. We call this one the Gettleman. He was a master at this.
This is why I drink.
So that's why.
And so this is what these owners set up. GMs who feel desperate, so they go out and spend, and they tie themselves to bad contracts, and then they get fired.
John Mara was fascinating in all the wrong ways yesterday. That was like a 5-minute Q&A, maybe 8 answers, and every single answer contradicted the first half by the time he was done. Yep. It was nuts. Like, you just
never seen him like that before.
Yeah.
Never seen him like that. He's, you know, we have a little experience with John Mara. I've interviewed him several times.
He's usually consistent, you're saying?
You know, I think he's usually as truthful as he can be, and this felt like he's keeping these guys for one reason and one reason only, because he doesn't want to look like he's pulling the trigger too fast on them again.
Again.
And it's this revolving door. There's no way you can back up that the team's headed in the right direction. They've literally gotten worse every single year. There's no evidence for this, and he generally doesn't contradict himself or lie like this. These were just lies.
He said they had a good offseason last year, but then couldn't say that the team was actually better than they were when Shane took over. It was crazy. You're right. He should have just picked a sentence, and just repeated it over and over again and never answered any questions, because trying to answer them, he like defeated himself midway yeah. through his thought, because it began with irrational defense of them, and then it went back to what the reason, all the reasons why they should be fired.
Hey, I have a question. Okay, so you guys both know there's a general statement, bad owner, bad team, and they've been a bad team. So is he a bad owner? Is the reason they've struggled since 2011 because of him?
I think that he's become a bad owner in this way. They're showing loyalty to people behind the scenes in the front office who do not deserve it. And
but didn't he show loyalty before that? Like, why did it work?
Because I think those people, the game is either passing them by or they're hanging on to trying to find the next Eli Manning, like literally finding a carbon copy. It's silly. That's where it is to me. So I think the loyalty is
clinging to the past.
That, I think, to everyone but the head coaches. And he's listening to Bill Belichick and bringing in Joe Judge, which was, to me, the worst of the worst of the hires. Joe Judge was not ready.
It just feels to me like it wasn't just John, as you guys heard. It was Shad. It was Robert Kraft. There's a group of owners where I feel like their time really should be up, and they should be either handing it off to younger their kids or selling the team or moving on, because these guys all sound like Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
We all make fun of how bad Jerry Jones is and how bad Woody Johnson are. And both of those guys are also super old, and I don't think we talk about that enough with Woody Johnson. Like, I just think these guys, even a Kraft and even a Mara, who are great owners, they should not be involved as much as they are. And I think that they're the reasons why their teams are so bad.
So Woody Johnson's teenage son should be running the Jets?
maybe someone a little older than teenage.
Someone
like,
in the middle?
Split the difference.
With Tony Khan, like, you know,
between
he 76 seems like a cool
and
guy.
18, can we get someone in the middle?
I saw a headline on ESPN.com. It was the fourth headline down. Jets owner: my teenage sons will not pick the next coach. I was like, this is a headline?
Yeah.
This is really happening.
Yeah.
It's real life.
It's why they are, and we joked about the Saints, I think, we would do that when he was out, like, there's an irrelevant franchise right now, but I keep seeing the Jets as the worst landing spot than the Saints. And the Saints have no cap space. They're locked into Derek Carr for next year, but nobody wants the Jets. Nobody wants Woody Johnson. They are an utter embarrassment, and somehow the Giants are only slightly better.
I mean, who is the Jets and the Giants don't have a quarterback. At least the Saints have Derek Carr.
And the Giants don't even have their number one pick anymore to sell to a guy to use on his quarterback.
Imagine if the Jets had just signed Derek Carr. They might be in a better spot.
Yeah. He might have got hurt, too.
Probably.
Yeah. This is I do like EJ's ageist theory, by the way. Probably a little mean, but probably true, actually, if you look at the numbers. Looking good for a lot of these guys.
It just is what it is. I'm just looking at, I mean, you guys heard that.
I know, but no, it definitely sounds like guys are definitely getting up there. Of course they are, but I don't think age, you can be a bad owner and be young. Dan Snyder is how old? 55?
Yeah, I mean,
he was a terrible owner. You can be young and be a bad owner too.
Yes. I do think the Lions, their ownership got old, wasn't good, and you sort of pass the torch a little bit, and then they fix things. So maybe that is a solution. I mean, I don't know, like, what are the premier franchises now? The Chiefs?
Ravens?
Run by the kids.
Yeah, run by the kids.
People
you might have a point.
Yeah. Ravens, not old ownership. Again, my thing is, there are people who are 90 years old who are sharp as a tack. It's not necessarily about being, I'm saying these gentlemen.
Yeah, these guys.
These guys particularly, I listen to them. I've heard Kraft and I've heard Mara before. They did not sound like that.
But don't forget, and Perloff doesn't even know in the first place, the Giants have been bad for like a decade now. So a decade ago, John Mara wasn't old. He was just bad at picking people to run his football program.
That's fair.
Now he's old on the back end of it.
How old is Mark Davis? He's 69 already.
That haircut is ageless.
Make him look like he's 16. But
I think I would have given you like a 30-year range that I would agree
with. Yeah, right? Isn't that crazy?
If anywhere between 50 and 80, I would have went, yep, that's right.
I'm like, 50 and 80. My counterpoint to you, EJ, was Mark Davis isn't exactly running the show the right way.
True.
But he's actually old now, too.
Wait, how old is he?
He's 69.
Oh,
he's
that's
older.
Not old.
He's just, yeah, but he's older than I thought he was.
Mm. I think Vegas keeps you young or ages you in dog years. There's no in between. Well, Bogish.
Mike Vrabel to New England. Maybe not a done deal. Maybe the Patriots will pick Lions OC Ben Johnson, we discussed earlier this morning. And maybe Vrabel then goes to the Bears instead. At the very least, Vrabel slated to meet with Chicago tomorrow. The Saints want to meet with him as well. We also joked this morning that Ben Johnson is not even considering those Jets, but fellow Lions coordinator Aaron Glenn, he is the former Jet player, expected to interview as soon as tomorrow with Gangrene. Their list of candidates also includes Vance Joseph, Matt Nagy, Arthur Smith, Texans offensive coordinator Bobby Slowick, and Rex Ryan, who is interviewing today with the team in Florida. Packers wideout Christian Watson suffered a torn ACL in the regular season finale. And you remember Jordan Love hurt his right elbow in that game. Matt LaFleur said yesterday the QB's fine. He wasn't sure, though, if Love would have to miss any practice time this week. Last night's FCS title game in Frisco, Texas, ending in a unique way.
Bison punt from their 40. The long snap to Steindorf. He gets it away. Booming it over everybody. Clock is running. It goes down inside the 25. Rolls inside the 20.
Don't touch
Clock
it.
At one. Bison have done it! And DSU rushing out of the field. The dynasty has come back to reclaim its rightful throne.
That's from Bison Radio. They punt out a 35-32 win over top-seeded and previously unbeaten Montana State. Again, 35-32 the final after NDSU led 21-3 at the half. They hold on for their 10th national title, the most all-time by four. All 10 have come in the last 14 years. Is left foot a new Joel Embiid injury, Perloff?
Who cares? I have
Either
no
way,
idea.
He didn't play last night.
Left foot?
Yeah.
I don't remember, but maybe.
I think it's
his right knee is the bad one, right?
Right. He did not play last night with the Suns in town.
Beal gives to Oso in the lane, out to a wide open Durant for three, and he cans it in the left corner right in front of the Suns bench. 20 on the night for KD. Suns go up 14 with 3 minutes left. And a timeout for Nick Nurse and the 76ers.
That's John Bloom, Suns Radio Phoenix, a 109-99 win. Durant scoring 23. 25 from Bradley Beal in his first game since being demoted to the bench.
A little difficult, I'm not gonna lie. Not gonna lie. But when the coach made his decision, he lived with it. Either pout with it or do something about it and just go compete, do what I do.
There are trade rumors involving Beal, and there are reports that other players are unhappy with Mike Budenholzer's rotations in Phoenix. Guys, back to you.
Man, NBA players unhappy? Get out of here. That never happens. Thank you, Bogish. Coming up, Micah Parsons is out here recruiting, as EJ would say, in the streets. We'll tell you who he wants to join him with the Dallas Cowboys next. It's M&P. Sound. It's our cowboy quickie. Unfortunately, we do not have an update for you on Mike McCarthy's future as the head coach of the Cowboys. We do not know yet. We know that the Chicago Bears are interested in interviewing him, but Jerry has got to give it the okay because McCarthy's under contract until January 14th.
So yeah, and you know that Jerry does not like to pay people for not working for him. He'll get every last ounce out of that contract.
Totally. So the waiting game, the staring contest, whatever you want to call it, continues between the owner and the head coach. Meanwhile, Micah Parsons, never shy, Pearl, pass rusher, out here on social media, tweeting to who else? Tyreek Hill, saying we can be the fastest duo in the league. We also don't have state income taxes. There you go. Neither does Florida.
Neither does Florida.
Right.
Yesterday I said that Tyreek Hill is washed. I got to be honest. That's an interesting spot for Tyreek Hill. As a legit number two, maybe that could work. I'm down on 31-year-old receivers. That would be an interesting combination.
So, yeah, listen. To me, it's just weird. How did this Tyreek Hill thing go downhill so quickly? He's in Miami. Mm. I get it. Tua's injuries have definitely hurt the team. But he seemed like he completely understood, hey, it was just a bad year because Tua got hurt. And now all of a sudden he's putting a meme up of himself on social media, photoshopping his face on Antonio Brown's shirtless body when Antonio Brown quit in the middle of a game.
It's a wide receiver, Maggie. They're just wired differently.
Yes,
of course Tyreek Hill wants out. Every wide receiver wants out of everywhere. A.J. Brown, I'm telling you, A.J. Brown will complain every year. Deebo Samuel, he's not had a single year in his NFL career where he didn't complain about something.
Yeah, Stephon Diggs had to leave Buffalo.
Yeah, I just think, and by the way, I don't think it's a bad thing. I need you need this massive, massive ego to be a wide receiver. You just have to believe every time I run a route, you should throw it to me because I'm going to score a touchdown for you. That's what you want out of a receiver. But it creates these bizarre late career situations where the receivers are never happy. You notice when we talk about guys who want to leave their team, like 45%, or no, actually like 60% of the time, it's a receiver.
Yeah.
So I don't know why. This didn't surprise me at all.
And Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, who feels like he's wired like a wide receiver.
Yeah, even though he's a corner. That's your Cowboy cookie.
That's another old guy who actually is, he is so good.
He also tweeted yesterday some long quote trying to be metaphorical, and we get it. You don't want to be there.
I get it. Miami doesn't really have much of a future, you know.
Well, they're keeping Mike McDaniel. They're happy with him. They're keeping Chris Greer, the general manager. How these guys get to keep being general managers and they do not win playoff games is just beyond me. But again, Mike Tomlin gets to keep his job. He doesn't want a playoff game. We're closing in on a decade. I don't get it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's definitely, you talked about the Bears' playoff futility. I mean, the Dolphins have done nothing.
They haven't won a playoff game since 2000. It's crazy.
Did they win one in 2000? I know they haven't been
to 2001.
NFC title game since 90 or something. AFC title game since 1990. And we complain about the Cowboys not winning. Like, they've done relatively well compared to some of these franchises.
It's funny because we don't love it when guys get fired after a year, unless it's like a Nathaniel Hackett or someone who really deserves it. But like, did Gerard Mayo really deserve to get fired after a year? Do you not think he could get better? He's been in your building for basically 14 years, either a player or as an assistant. But the other part is guys who get to stay for too long, that's also a problem. Where you get dudes where the team gets so loyal to them or so comfortable that they just get to stay, like a Chris Greer.
Well, on the GM side, I see what you're saying. I mean, like, listen, the Eagles moved on from Andy Reid, and at first it looked like a horrible idea because they went to Chip Kelly and flamed out really fast. So it's hard. There's no one size fits all. I mean, there are some one and dones that everyone agreed on, like Nathaniel Hackett in Denver. But it's
Urban
interesting.
Meyer.
You look at Gerard Mayo, like, why did Brian Callahan get to keep his job in Tennessee? Was there a single positive thing that came out of the season? Nothing.
No.
He made a terrible mistake sticking with Will Levis too long when he should have gone to Mason Rudolph.
Well, I wonder if that was coming from upstairs.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's why he gets to keep his job, because he was actually following orders. Good point.
Perhaps. Now they have the number one overall pick, Tennessee, so we'll see what they do. Either seems like Shador or Cam Ward. We have plenty of time to dissect that, but I think we're both fans of both of those guys. Although I think not to put words in your mouth, but I think
I don't know this if it's a 1-2 quarterback draft. I mean, listen, it almost always is. I just don't know if these guys are. I heard a really interesting analysis the other day. If you had the 6 quarterbacks from last year, does Cam Ward or Shador Sanders go over any of them? Certainly not the top 3. They're definitely behind Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May. But do they go over Bo Nix? Do they go over
J.J. McCarthy?
I don't know. Do they? Cam Ward 2 years ago was out in the Pac-12. He was good, but he was nothing like this. He's like, you could argue he's a one-year wonder.
I know, but I don't think that scares away NFL teams now. I think all you need is really one good year because, you know, the way that college football is now, guys are just going to bounce around, and then you mature, you get a little older, and you get a little more seasoned. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
I don't know. Caleb Williams had multiple good years. Drake May had better, I think, year before this draft year.
Bo Nix had 2 years at Oregon.
Yeah, Bo Nix. Yeah, I'm not sure I see what you're saying. It is a new world where you, like, Joe Burrow could just show up for his last year with the right coach and work out. I don't know. It's definitely a weird draft class. And if it's not them, like, it's not like there's any other surefire thing. Travis Hunter would be your clear number one. But you don't even know what position that guy is. So it is a complicated draft. It's definitely not. It's not one of those drafts where, like, wow, there's 10 surefire Hall of Famers.
My prediction, I want to say Cam Ward 1, Shador 2. But if it's Cleveland making the pick, I don't think Deion is going to let Shador go to Cleveland. Anyway, we got a lot of time to unpack that, but that would be my big board. I can't give you the number because we're out of time. Shoot. EJ Stewart, thank you. Manny Rodriguez, thank you. Andrew Bogish, Andrew Kaplan, the Weedos, the coffee drinkers, the callers. You guys are awesome. Can't do the show without you. See you tomorrow.